Good morning and welcome. My name's Joseph. I'm one of the pastors here in case that you're new, and we're so glad you're here. Please open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. And if you forgot to bring a Bible or don't have one, there are some at the little table here by the sound booth, and we'd be happy to give you one if you don't have one, or you can just borrow one anytime that you're here to use. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. So last weekend, as we were trying to make plans for Hannah to feel special on Mother's Day, most of those plans dramatically failed, by the way. It's a bit of a disaster. But while we were doing that, one of our kids said, "How come there's days for moms and for dads to make them feel special, but there's no days for kids?" To which Hannah responded without hesitation, can you guess? Every day is kids' day. My goodness, so true. Even Mother's Day and Father's Day are still kids' days because they're just mostly spent trying to keep your kids alive and happy. Every day is kids' day. And you know what? I'm okay with that because that's a part of love and a part of sacrifice. Well, in the same way, we could say that every Sunday is Resurrection Day, and actually even more so, we could say every day is Resurrection Day. And I hope we can also say, I'm okay with that as well, as we realize that means every day is focused on love and sacrifice and on something bigger than ourselves. Here's the big idea or kind of thesis for this message, an idea we've already mentioned where we want all of this to lead in this series, and that is this, that what we think about resurrection impacts everything about our lives. What we do, what we say, how we use our time, money, talents, how we think about the world, and especially what we think about and what we believe about eternity, which in turn affects how we live in the present. Throughout this series, I'll be referring to quite heavily and relying on a very influential book by theologian N.T. Wright. It's called Surprised by Hope, Rethinking Heaven, the Resurrection, and the Mission of the Church. And there's actually one copy in the library that you can sign out, or it would be awesome if you just bought a copy and read through it during this series. But be warned, it is kind of heavy and heady reading. But Wright says that what you think about death and life beyond it is the key to thinking seriously about everything else. And it gives shape and color to everything else in our lives. And what both Wright and the Apostle Paul here in 1 Corinthians 15 say essentially is that our present actions impact our future. And our understanding of the future in turn impacts our present actions. And the theme verse for chapter 15 and what becomes Paul's conclusion at the end of this chapter, and therefore really the conclusion for us in this series that we'll refer back to often, is verse 58, where it says, therefore, meaning in light of all this resurrection hope we're talking about, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. How do you know? Because the evidence of the resurrection. What Paul's saying in context is that what we think about the future, particularly God's kingdom that is to come and our place in it through resurrection, should energize and bring to life our work in the present, because we know it's not in vain. In other words, it all matters. And this chapter is the Bible's most specific explanation about the resurrection and what it is like and what it means to live a post-Easter life, to live in light of Easter and the resurrection. And so my title for this week and probably next week and maybe a few weeks as well is that it all matters. It's about living the post-Easter life. And so last week, Ellie introduced the theme of the garden, and we're going to get some more horticultural imagery here to try to communicate some great mysteries this morning. So the Corinthians had some questions. Namely, in verse 35 here, they say, but someone will ask, Paul says, how are the dead raised? With what kind of body will they come? And Paul says, how foolish! What you sow does not come to life unless it dies. How are the dead raised? What kind of body will they come? Now, at first, those sound like great and perfectly reasonable questions, right? So why does Paul respond with verse 36, how foolish? I mean, that's not very kind, right? Does Paul need some sensitivity training? What's the deal here? Well, the answer lies in the previous verses. Remember in verse 12 that some of the Corinthians were claiming that there is no resurrection of the dead. And they are misleading others. And these resurrection deniers are the bad company that Paul refers to in verse 33. They are, in Paul's words in verse 34, ignorant of God because they do not affirm a bodily resurrection. That's how important it is. So these are not, you know, humble, sincere questions being asked. These are being asked mockingly by some in Corinth, basically saying, so, you believe in that weird resurrection stuff, huh? Well, how exactly are those dead bodies raised? And, you know, oh, hey, Paul, what kind of body do they become like? Are they like zombies? Do they have superpowers? Go ahead, explain it, Mr. Smarty Pants Paul. That's kind of the tone that they're using here. And so Paul explains and defends the resurrection not only to them, but also to the church in Corinth, and for the sake of the church, who are maybe being persuaded or influenced by some of these bad characters. And what he does is just so brilliant, and it's worthy of deep pondering as we read it here. Paul basically says, you know, this is not such an unbelievable idea. In fact, we see it happen in God's creation all the time, and we don't think twice about it. Why then would it be so hard to think about it when it comes to our own bodies? So listen now to what he says starting in verse 37. So I'm just kind of now getting to the text. Verse 37. He says, when you sow, you do not plant the body that will be, but just a seed, perhaps of wheat or of something else. But God gives it a body as he has determined, and to each kind of seed he gives its own body. Not all flesh is the same. People have one kind of flesh, animals have another, birds another, and fish another. There are also heavenly bodies and there are earthly bodies, but the splendor of the heavenly bodies is one kind, and the splendor of the earthly bodies is another. The sun has one kind of splendor, the moon has another, and the stars another, and star differs from star in splendor. Now listen to what he says. So will it be with the resurrection of the dead. The body that is sown is perishable. It is raised imperishable. It is sown in dishonor. It is raised in honor, in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body. It is raised a spiritual body. What Paul's saying is there are clues in God's creation on how resurrection works. And Paul specifically uses the analogy of a seed sown into the ground. So So the best way I could think of to kind of try to explain this or show this was to make a chart or a visual here to show what I'm about to say and talk about. And so the body as a seed of promise, and the pattern here is that when a seed is sown, it leads to a related but a different kind of body, right? So an earthly body leads to a heavenly body. A perishable body goes to imperishable. Dishonor to glory, weakness to power, natural, spiritual, a mortal body is sown, an immortal body is what results. Paul says here that in nature, you don't expect the seed to look like the finished product, right? You start with the seed. So I have here tomato seeds. They're very small. So you start with, very small. You start with the seed, which you cannot see here. But when you plant it, you expect it to produce something different, but related to the seed, right? It's still linked to the seed, somehow a part of it, but also completely different. It's not just going to grow into a bigger version of this seed. That's not why we plant a seed, right? We want to see it transformed because what it's become, what it's meant to be, right? We want to see the life contained within the seed come to pass. And so it is in a way with our bodies, right? These natural, perishable, but mortal bodies somehow are sown or planted, so to speak, and become imperishable, spiritual, immortal bodies. Ayo Adewuga, who I got to meet recently, and we're using his First Corinthians commentary, he says that the biggest hurdle to talking about the resurrection is its incomprehensibility. Right, that we're talking about an incredible mystery here. However, Paul is saying that in some ways, it's actually not that hard to understand or imagine when you think about it. Just look all around you for the evidence of how this works. When we sow something, we expect something different to then come about. And just like when a seed, this little seed, dies in its germination and becomes something else, eventually this, that's its middle stage with the little flowers blooming there, tomato plants. He says, so it will be with our bodies. But the new life that springs up from that seed is still related, tied to the seeds. So to use the words of my new friend, Ayo, here, the plant is directly linked to the seed, but also remarkably different, right? So directly linked, but remarkably different in the final products. The relationship between our natural and our resurrected body is connected. Similar in some ways, right? A strawberry seed doesn't grow into a daffodil, right? They're related. But it's also not just a bigger version of the seed. It retains the same nature while being different. And in this way, we can say, as many theologians have, that there is both continuity and discontinuity between this body, this seed, and the resurrected body that is to come, just like it is in plant life, where there is a link between seed and what it produces, but they're also different. See, whereas our current body is made for this world, for its purposes, our resurrection body will be designed for the new world and its purposes. Each body has its own splendor for its own context. But a key takeaway from this metaphor or illustration that Paul uses is that there is a connection between what happens in this world and in this body and with this body and the world that is to come and that body and what happens to our bodies is going to be a microcosm of what is going to happen to the whole world. That is, it will be renewed in a way that is directly linked to the present, but also remarkably different. And it's why the Bible speaks more of a new creation, a new heavens, and a new earth, more than it does of a spiritual-only existence in heaven. There is continuity between this creation and the new creation that is to come. This world is the seed of the world that is to come. And I'll say this many times over the next several weeks and flesh it out more, but I want this to soak in. The goal of the Christian life is not heaven. It is heaven coming to earth. It is about the seed of this creation growing into the beautiful new creation, which means everything we do in this life, in this body, this seed, if you will, is connected to that life. It all matters. It is the seed from which resurrection, life, and renewal will take shape and form. So I know that's some heavy, what we would call, theological anthropology there. But let me make a few applications or implications of all this to get you thinking about how our life before death is influenced by what we believe about life after death. So how our life before death is influenced by what we believe about our life after death. So number one, a direct application here is our care for creation, that matter matters. Jesus coming into the world in bodily form, into the physical world, was a way of him affirming the goodness of creation, including the physical body that he took on. Part of the heresy or problems in the church in Corinth was what we call Gnosticism or Gnostic influence, which in simple terms was the belief that matter is evil, including our bodies, and only the spiritual, only the soul is what matters. And this is still a heretical belief among many Christians today, kind of still unknowingly adopting this idea when we, you know, treat the body or earth as just temporary things that don't really matter in eternity. But this is a gross misreading of the Bible. I mean, all you have to do is start at the very beginning in Genesis chapter 1 at the creation mandate, where we are called to look after and to steward creation, to bring order to God's good world and to establish communities of love and care for one another. This world is the seed that we have been given responsibility over, that will one day grow and flourish into all that it is intended to be. There is continuity between this creation and the next new creation. And it's why the world is just so beautiful, because it is pointing to something that is to come. It is designed to be flooded, filled, drenched in God's presence, who will one day be, verse 28, all in all. I love what Wright says here. He says that just as a violin or a chalice is beautiful because we know what it is designed for or contains, so it is when we look at the earth. And so we care for, we water this seed, we give space for it to flourish, knowing it will then produce something more beautiful that we will one day all get to participate in. You know, we don't just throw our seeds out into the yard and just assume that something's going to happen and that something beautiful will come of it just by throwing it out there. No, we know that it takes careful cultivation. We know the seeds, they need tending to, and so it is with God's good earth. And it's why Christians were the very first environmentalists centuries ago, the first to really actually prioritize caring for the earth. Even in modern times, Earth Day was founded by a Pentecostal. Maybe you didn't know that. But our poor understanding in theology has sometimes caused us to treat the earth poorly, not understanding its connection with the new creation that is to come. Similarly, second, care for our bodies, that the seed is sacred. More on this in the coming weeks, but for now, let me just say this, that you know, we are wholes, wholes, we are wholes, not just souls. That is, we are not spiritual souls trapped in a physical body. Our body is somehow a part of who we are, related to us, the related seed, connected. And we'll see this as we discuss more scripture, but just to give you a taste of some practical thinking that is to come, and I've been asked this by several people since this series started, but I think it's accurate to say that bodily burial is more in line with the scriptural metaphor here of a seed sown into the ground. But we'll get into all that. But let's close with how resurrection leads to, number three, care for others, and how love is eternal. It all matters. We just learned two chapters ago in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that many things will cease away and will pass, but love and our acts of love will never fail and always remain. Do you want your life to have a lasting, eternal impact? Show love to others in the world. And because love is our future, we need to practice it and learn it now. And it's not just any love, but it's the sacrificial love that Jesus showed us, a love that would die even for our enemies. A love that blesses those who despise us, that cares for and has compassion for the least, the lost, the lonely, and the left behind. See, because I believe in life after death and a world completely drenched in the love of God, I must also believe in living and offering the message of life before death to others, which comes through the resurrection of Jesus and the promised spirit of love given to us, a taste of eternity and that eternal love deposited into our hearts through the Spirit. And that's part of what we'll celebrate on Pentecost. And that's why we're encouraging you to invite people and invite others into this great story of love that we'll celebrate on that day. Church, in a post-Easter world, we are called to give ourselves fully to the work of the Lord. Because we know, and hopefully now you know why you know, that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Why? Because of the resurrection, the fruit of this seed that is to come. Your care for this world and for others is not in vain. It is the seed that one day will sprout forth into a new kingdom, a new heaven, and a new earth in the life that is to come. I'm going to invite the music team to come up. I have just a reflection question for you to kind of ponder. Where is God calling you to change how you care for creation, our bodies, or others in light of the resurrection? So we actually have a gift for you this morning to remind you of today's text and teaching. And this is just an amazing story. You can't make this up. That somebody had contacted us and had the idea. They said, I just want to give everybody seeds and plants and fruits and vegetables or whatever, all this kind of stuff. I just want to bless the whole congregation. I'm willing to do it. I'm going to get all the stuff and bring it. And they had no idea that this is what we were going to talk about. Isn't that amazing? We were just like blown away. We're like, this is perfect. This is great. They had no idea. They're just like, I just want to do this. I just had this in my heart. So these seeds that you have, there's some on the back table there. There's some here. What we want you to do now is use them as a reminder as we go through the rest of this series that all the sowing we do in this life, it matters. And it is directly linked to and connected to what is to come.